Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up. Please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left? Gaping pit waiting to swallow us all. Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello, and welcome to a storm of spoilers. I was listening back, and I usually start off with how good of a week it's going to be for me. I've realized that unlike the past two recordings, because we've been diverging from the book so much, but as people have settled into our podcast, we're going to settle into spoilers a little bit early. I'm only going to talk about this episode, but I am going to allude to the fact that, like, with this week and with future episode titles, as you guys have pointed out on, like, previous episodes, it looks like we're going to kind of swerve back into the book and still have, you know, enough, you know, I guess, content to have a major character death basically in each remaining episode, which is going to be super. But I mean, other things that are happening, like the Iron Bank has debuted, and Danny's stuff is kind of pulled from future books, but it looks like we have like a return to the text. So maybe not a great week for me, but off that, we were talking early with somebody on Twitter, Joanna and I were, who has had a problem with my reliance last week on the show needing to have a theme. And I say, oh ho, good listener. I feel like that is a critical tool, not necessarily a criticism. And let me explain how I'm going to use that to enter this week's episode. I wrote something down earlier today, and we'll see if anything comes of this. And if not, I'm an idiot, and I withdraw everything I'm about to say. Everyone says the theme of this episode is justice, but it's really about seemingly futile pleas for honor from disfigured and beaten men. Are those pleas accepted or denied, and why? Joanna?
Yeah, well, I like what you said about disfigurement. I think that's a very strong theme in this episode. But is there, yeah, that's a good question. Is there a unifying theme? Are they all rejected? They're not all rejected, right?
I don't think so. But I mean, I think some of them are also left as like sort of plot cliffhangers, so we could deal with them later in the season or perhaps next season.
I think Ser Davos was not rejected.
Yeah.
His plea wins in the end.
And his disfigurement sort of worked to his advantage there. Mm-hmm. Are we counting his star's plea? I mean, that's not a plea on the behalf of his mutilated father.
Well, I mean,
that's what he wants, I guess. But I guess mostly we're talking about Theon and Tyrion.
Right, but I mean, in the Davos-Stannis scene, couldn't you also argue that Stannis is the broken man whose plea fails?
Okay.
And that's what causes Davos to come forward.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good thing. I didn't think about the justice theme either. I didn't know that was what people were latching onto, but it makes sense, I guess.
Well, I mean, you have three storylines with people literally sitting in judgment of another person.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking about the whole leadership thing, because we get Tommen introduced by his title, Dany introduced by her title, Stannis introduced by his title. So it's not just like sitting in judgment, it's also these leaders and what it means to be, you know, Tommen recuses himself, Stannis has someone speak for him, Dany is the only one who really sort of steps up and owns her leadership role, even though she is clearly out of her depth in some ways. So that was sort of the theme that I latched on to, but I do like that justice theme and the main theme. I don't know. Neil, what are your thoughts?
That's actually the leadership one is one that I had not thought of. The justice one, I think, is one that I saw through the episode, and it was really about the different types of justice. And I think a lot of it comes to light in the scene at the Iron Bank where Mark Gatiss's character starts talking about, you know, how over in Westeros they have all these, you know, these things like birthright, and in Braavos they use math to determine what is right and what's right. wrong, essentially. So the different types of justice that exist. So yeah, that's there. But I really think the strongest theme of this entire episode was those broken characters and their search, I guess their search for justice, or their search for whatever it is they believe is what is rightfully their end point, which in Theon's case is just kind of to be left alone. Like, his whole thing is he just does not want to be tortured anymore.
Right.
Tyrion's ultimately is, I need to get out here. I need to say something. You know, I need to try and break these people back for what they've done to me unfairly. And then Davos is, he's a true believer. He really believes in Stannis. So he's going to use his disfigurement as an example of why Stannis, of why he believes in Stannis, and why the Braavos, the Iron Bank, should give them money. So it's really the quest of the broken men that felt very big to me.
Yeah, and I think you could echo that out to, you know, the farmer with the goat and our future boyfriend prospect for Daenerys. And, well, it's more so what we learn of his father and his father's downfall at the crucifixion. And then also Jaime, who's beaten and disfigured mm-hmm. and finally gives in to his father, sort of in a futile gesture. But I think that, like, the disfigurement and the, you know, quests for justice, I think where those things can hinge either way is if their pleas are heard or answered, or if they're sort of left in a greater question. But I do think that the asking of the question is a theme that I would connect these three scenes. And maybe it's an episode that's easy to do because it's basically three or four different plot lines sort of smushed together and isolated. Once again, we spend, you know, the latter half of the episode in one location, except instead of Craster's Keep horribleness, we get a very nice courtroom scene that manages to pile different layers on top of itself, where you have the family and you have the actual thing that's going on, and you also have a recontextualizing of everything we've seen from Tyrion up to this point, I guess just to show how easy betrayal is.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that, I guess, the ramifications of changing that scene more into a straight courtroom / Lannister scene up until, you know, the break, the artificial break, or the non-textual, I shouldn't say artificial because it happened, the non-textual break in the trial before Shay sort of comes up and throws that cannonball. What have we lost in diverging from the trial, if anything?
I don't know. I didn't feel like we lost anything. Neil, what did you think?
I don't think so either. I actually really thought that this is a good example of how well the show develops the emotion when it gets a chance to breathe and when it gets a chance to spend a lot of time in one place. That's something that I think, you know, we've talked about the last couple episodes, but one of the things that all that jumping around and trying to keep up with all these other storylines takes away from is sometimes the emotion that we're supposed to feel. And I feel like we get so much time in this trial that when that, you know, when Shay shows up at the end and Tyrion has his big speech and it all kind of just comes crashing down, it really sticks because of how much time they spend in King's Landing and because of those kind of secondary scenes, and seeing Jaime go to his father and kind of offer himself up for his brother is kind of a payoff to what they've been building with Tyrion trying to get him to help him. So I feel like it's a good example of not going away from a storyline and it working really well from an emotion standpoint.
Yeah. And that's something that, you know, we did an interview with Brian Cogman over on A Cast of Kings, and that's something that he had said there and elsewhere, which is that they've made a real effort this season to not cut away, cut away, cut away. So everything is trending back towards what we get in like a Blackwater episode, where they try to give you 20 solid minutes in one location at the end of every episode. And in this, you know, we get the Davos storyline to completion. We get the Ramsay storyline to completion. We get the Dany storyline to completion without any cutaways. And then we get the trial. And I think it works so much better than trying to, the exhausting task of trying to keep up with every single character and then being scattered. And so then I think it allows for more of what you, Dave, like, which is these thematic connections. If you focus on fewer stories, you can go deeper into plucking out the thematic resonances throughout. So
that's true. And when I listened to your Brian Cogman interview, which is excellent, but the part I most enjoyed was he talked about adding in all the two character sort of just sort of talking about nothing, but in really great scenes, adding those in the first season because they sort of came up short, and how that sort of became a hallmark of the show. What's interesting to me is somebody who's talked about this show and used to think about it as more of like a history of like a series of events, and it was up to the audience to piece together like the characters and the thread. It's definitely taking a turn to one of the other things we've been talking about this season, which is trying to recontextualize the characters in the audience mind. I guess the question is are those thematic stone-touching scenes like the one we get between Oberyn and Varys here, are they losing some of their greater punch because the actual narrative is now good and they built this show's structure around having these holes to fill?
Oh.
Could it be a negative?
I mean, I don't feel like that scene lacked any punch. And I think that something that we're really engaging in the show this season is this dealing with the loss, which we talked about elsewhere, the loss of heroes and villains. And so the more we can get of character and the more we can understand how nuanced everything is, how we can like Varys as a character and like Tyrion as a character and watch the trial scene and watch Varys do something that hurts Tyrion and still be invested in both of them, is what makes the saga and the show and all of it work so well, is you find yourself in the middle of something.
Do both of you feel like this season, without this episode, up until this episode, has been serving that character purpose for you? Or do you feel like it was more trying to position characters in our mind and not really necessarily allowing them to grow and flower?
I'm going to let Neil answer because I feel like I've been talking too much.
say that one more time. Let me wrap my mind around that question, Dave.
Okay. So without this episode, very much so, I guess, let me just skip past the pretense and ask the actual question that I'm talking about. Up until now, we've seen some divergence from the books, basically in every episode, and now it looks like they're signaling to get back towards the plot-heavy latter half chunk of this book. And so my question to you guys is, I don't think it's necessarily a mistake that we see another Talking to the Throne scene as we're returning to these large character chunks. So does the fictionalized non-textual stuff work for you, or as book readers / television watchers, does it feel like these characters are positioned for a plot leap?
It works for me, mostly because I think this season for me, more than any of the seasons previous, has become this process of accepting that there are certain places where the show is going to take the long way around. But it always seems to get to the same place. So we think about Varys and Prince Oberyn having this conversation where they're kind of feeling each other out. They're trying to gauge, you know, Oberyn's trying to gauge where Varys is and what he's willing to do. When you think about, as a book reader, where these characters end up in a couple of episodes, one of them just vanishing and the other one having this badass super fight, that's going to be the greatest thing in the history of television ever.
It really is.
It's so good. It's going to be so good. I appreciate the fact that we get to spend a little more time with these characters. I had a similar thought about the scene with the Ironborn going to rescue Theon, because that is that's a very off book sort of thing. There really wasn't that, as far as I can remember, there really wasn't that rescue in the books. Like they, right. She never really runs into, what's his name? Blood, super angry sex guy, Ramsey.
Blood, super angry sex guy. That's what I'm calling him from now on.
He definitely, his story definitely went to completion. I've been holding on to that joke for a couple minutes now. But what it, I think it does serve a purpose. When I was watching the scene the first time, I said, you know, what's the point of this? Because obviously Theon's not going to go with his sister. You know, I know where his story goes. The end point for Theon is not to get rescued. But it does feel right as a little moment for that Yara character. If they're going to bring back, if they're going to, if she's going to now leave and go, my brother is dead. So when her father dies, hopefully later this season, and they do this Kingsmoot thing, that gives her more credibility as this is why I need to take over. You know, this is why I need to be in charge of the Ironborn. So I feel like it's a very important little character moment they've added to get to the same destination as the books.
And
I think with, oh, go ahead, Joanna.
Well, I just 100% agree with you. Like, when we look at something like the Yara rescue, which is not in the book, or the Craster's Keep mission that's not in the book, we have to look at what it's accomplishing, since we know all the set pieces are going to reset and go back to where they started, right? And yeah, and so then it just has to be about character, and it definitely is. I agree with you about Yara. I think she is definitely going to be stepping in for Victarion Greyjoy, and we need to have more of a connection with her this season so that we can root for her going forward. And ditto, you know, just this moment with Theon and really seeing how deeply he has sunk into this persona, which we as book readers understand, but the show watchers really needed to see this, I think. So
I definitely agree. I was going to say on the Brian Cogman interview at GameOfThronesPodcast.com, he's very good at not spoiling things, but you could hear him when he's talking about Yara basically saying he needs to strengthen her position for the Kingsmoot, which I thought was a great moment of the podcast where he's like, this is about her accepting in her mind that her brother's dead, even though she's, you know, seemingly was going to go rescue him, and therefore she's now accepted it and it has to move on, which was super cool to hear him talk about. But I do want to talk a little bit more about that, because I want to ask you, how much of the Greyjoys do you think we're actually going to get remaining in this season? It seems like they could leave whatever Ramsay and Reek are up to and the death of the eldest Greyjoy off to next season if they wanted to.
They could, but I think that would be a mistake. I think they're being very smart about, like, really building the foundation for next season and this season. Mm-hmm. And I think we're, like, my guess, and I think it's been a lot of people's guess, is that Miranda, this bedwarmer that we've seen twice, is going to stand in as the fake Arya. So I think they just need to keep reminding us that she's around. That's my guess. And then, yeah, we're going to have to see some more Yara and Balon stuff. You know, I don't know about the Moat Cailin stuff. I think that can wait. But what else?
But if all that plot is going to be, if like the Kingsmoot's in next season, wouldn't we benefit from seeing a death at the beginning of next season in that way? Wouldn't that feel like a way to kick it off instead of like, and this other plot line that we left over from last season, a lot of people talking about the secession of the crowd.
Everyone wants to know who's going to rule the Ironborn. I don't know. That's a good question. Where it makes the most sense to have Balon's death and why they've waited so long for it.
Here's another question.
Yes.
Related to that. This is, I feel like I might've slept through this part of the book, but it does feel like that death is important in helping Stannis get to the wall. There's a lot to that, like the last leech type of thing that helps kind of motivate Stannis and his army. Now they're pretty motivated and now they have a bunch of money. So I don't know if the show really needs that, but that is kind of this loose thread that's hanging out there. Is he threw three leeches, two of them have died, one more, you know, to kind of seal the deal that he's the, you know, the,
and it's, the light it's risky.
Azor Ahai.
It's risky to pace things out like that, but wouldn't it also make sense where if Stannis and Jon Snow were in the same place and we suddenly have to care about the religions again, that's when the leech comes into play?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I think I honestly think that it would make sense if we don't see much of the Ironborn for the rest of the season. It would be fine because I feel like now that they're getting a lot of this other stuff, especially the Dany and Meereen stuff into this season, there's not a whole lot of material left for season 5. So they're going to need the Ironborn story next season. So maybe they do wait. And that's not necessarily a problem. Chronologically, it doesn't fit with the way the books are, but they've clearly shown the ability to go away from that and still make it work.
I love how much they've shot ahead, but I agree with you that it's getting kind of a little alarming if you add it up. And if you think about in terms of pacing, as you said at the beginning of the podcast, Dave, yeah, you can map out like Lys is dying next week. Oberyn's dying the week after that. Ygritte's dying the week after that. And Tywin and Shae are dying the week after that. Like, it's bonkers. Those are the four episodes we have for the rest of the season. And, and we all have our fingers crossed for Lady Stoneheart, like WTF Coda at the end of that. So like how they're going to top that or even match it next season is a big question mark for me, because how do you even?
I think the gaping hole that some of our listeners have felt of the religion is going to come in really hard.
But a religious plotline is no replacement for five named characters dying in four episodes. characters who we followed for season. Well, no one cares about Lysa, but it's still going to be a great death. So I don't know.
It is an excuse to signal that they're not the Red Wedding show, and now they're the show where, this crazy supernatural winter is coming.
Maybe.
I think it makes complete sense to make a slow transition into that. I don't think we're going to lose a lot of the King's Landing religious stuff. Just it seems like it has to be there in order for the presumptive end of the series / books to make sense. I don't know. It feels weird to get to that point one episode past the midpoint of season 3, so I'm most definitely getting ahead of myself.
Maybe, but
it does feel like they need to slow down a little bit. Like, next season, there's going to be a lot more breathing room.
Right. But, I mean, you could reach back during that. Like, they're reaching forward now because they need to give us something to root for after they basically kill off everybody we like. Once we are on board with the people we like, they're capable of reaching back and pulling those things forward, I hope, through translation. It's weird because it's like, okay, I've resisted for like 2 weeks bringing up The Amazing Spider-Man, but I'm going to do it.
Now's the time.
Because I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, and I kind of like the movies because it gives me like a character that I recognize, but in terms of like actual plot beats, everything's different. None of the villains they've introduced have been like comic book relevant. The Gwen Stacy thing is the most comic book relevant thing that they've done, but I still like it because it's giving me this thing that I know is the character I love at the core of it. I feel like that's the transition that Game of Thrones is trying to make this season, and they're going to have to leap into next season if they keep getting the viewers they are.
Well, I mean, and this is the argument that I made in that Vanity Fair post I wrote that got me a lot of trouble, which is that the show is telling a better story than the books. You know, which is, I mean, just in a certain way it is. Let me like qualify. And in the way it's doing it is by melding plots, by bringing plots forward, just the way that they're juggling time and playing with our affections. But yeah, if it just followed what the books does, which is kill off so many major characters and not give you the time to fall in love with the new characters before you are only left with them. I think that's something the show is being very smart about doing. Like, yeah, this episode was, I mean, the trial, the King's Landing stuff was half of the episode. So you can't say, you have to say it's 50% not book stuff, 50% book stuff. Like, that's what this episode was. But it feels even heavier because even more plot line, I was throwing around the number like 85%. But I mean, that's not accurate because I can do math. But like, there's so much off book stuff. And so you just really have to have faith in them that they know what they're doing and they know why they're doing what they're doing. We have to know why we saw Bravos early. Well, it makes sense, of course. We know why we saw Bravos early so that later, you know, we'll have Mark Gatiss's face to latch onto. And we're like, oh, we know those guys. We met them already. We saw their big statue. We like them. You know, so.
It also makes sense to introduce it as a location because Arya is going to be there shortly.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Like really shortly.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I'm assuming Sam will be there next season too, or is that way too fast?
Yeah, that would happen next. That feels like a next season.
I wonder how long they're gonna take getting John elected as leader. Is that something that they can accomplish in episode 10 here, or are they gonna have to leave that for next season?
It seems like at the end of episode 10, like, some of the people that we root for will be having great moments, and most of the people that we root for will be on boats leaving Westeros.
I want shirts made that say most of the people we root for are on boats. Well, yeah, Tyrion and Arya are definitely going to be on boats. But in terms of Jon, like, that's, and I really hope they don't condense that, because that's Sam's, I think, his best moment. And show Sam needs all the help he can get, because he is not nearly as sympathetic as Book Sam. And so his smartest, best moment is getting Jon elected there. So I think that should be, I hope they draw that out. I know that sounds like such
another, he's going to get another great moment when he has to go save Gilly from the place, from sticking her in the whorehouse, which is weird and doesn't make any sense.
It's true.
So.
Yeah,
that's true.
But since we get the Gilly stuff here and not on the Bravosi, whatever, that, you know, economy in one place is a possible hitch in another. But this, you know, podcast should probably be about this week's episode.
Yeah,
right?
Sorry. What else do we have to talk about? Well, I guess we should.
I want to talk about Daenerys' plotline, yeah. Because I think bringing that forward, it worked for me really well in the sense that I didn't know what I was supposed to be wikiing until it already happened. So I need some, help.
I don't know how much help I'm going to be, because I wrote my spoiler discussion this week and got it completely wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, so here's my take, right? Which is that it's all manufactured. Well, I mean, in the books, someone's going to bring her the body of a charred child at some point. And I thought that they were going to do that right away, which they're not. So we had like a goat herd and his goats, right? And that's essentially book-ish, if not literally book. And then Hisdar, that's completely – like Hisdar is a real character, obviously, right? But that his whole father story is not really in the book. That's, you know, it's alluded.
I do think it explains something though. The notion that she put all the high masters the up on the things, but like, why does he survive? So it makes sense that it was his father that is killed, and that explains why he's alive to then become a character that gets into her circle later.
Yeah,
so it makes sense from a show standpoint, because they don't have a lot of time to really build out the world of Meereen before all this stuff has to happen with her.
Right, and it's also good shorthand for, you done fucked up, Danny. Like, that was a rash move. So let's put a face on one of the people that you nailed up there. I thought it was a really effective scene. And I'm wondering how long are they going to draw this Jorah thing out? Is that going to be her climactic thing at the end of the season?
He's going to be on the ship.
He's one of the people on the ships in episode 10. Yeah.
On a ship at the end of the season. Everybody we like on a ship. Varys, probably also on a ship. Just saying, man. Well, but then again, 2 weeks ago, I was like, winter is coming and supernatural zombies. So, you know.
And they're not going back to that for like a season and a half.
No, they're like, that was your one peak.
Right.
Yep. I mean, we'll save that. We'll see who has what horns as we get further down.
We shall see.
The floor is lava and the wall is magic.
that's right.
I was just rereading the battle is going to be really good, like, because they showed a glimpse of the giant at the gate. I've been sort of rolling my in one of the trailers, exactly, and I've been sort of rolling my eyes at the concept of the battle being like this big Blackwater heir apparent, but I just reread that section and I was like, no, you know what, like, I can see it. I can see
it's
them
huge.
Yeah, I can see them making that work. So
throw in a little kid we care about, killing another character we care about.
Yeah, that mm-hmm. little kid's just fucking murdering Ygritte.
Just or storms like, of fiery arrows. Off
or will like, or will John murder Ygritte to protect the kid? That's another thing. That's another thought I had.
Ooh, I like that better. Although I've also previously said that everybody under a certain height is going to turn into a psychopath on this show.
That's also so. True. But he doesn't kill her in the book, right?
No.
She gets killed by some other dude.
Yeah. Well, there's an yeah. He doesn't kill her.
The Smith. Isn't it the Smith?
I don't feel like... I feel like he finds her and it's not clear who killed her, but... I could be wrong.
Wounded by an arrow. No, I'm looking at the wiki. I got it.
Like, I feel like he finds her with an arrow and he might say, like, was it my arrow? Which is the same thing he thought when he had an arrow on him and he was like, is it her arrow? You know, I could be wrong. And
I don't think this is the kind of show that shies away from having a kid kill a redheaded woman character.
No, and you know, the show, that is something that they're going to have to do over the next two episodes is remind us that we like Ygritte, because we've seen her twice and one time she was killing people. So, right.
Do you think they're going to do that? Or do you think that's like already the point of the season is defining characters and that's the best they're going to do.
Don't we need an Ygritte like monologue around a campfire talking about like something that's going to make us care about her before she dies?
With that performance, you just need a teary-eyed look up at the wall before everything goes to shit, and we'll know.
I feel like they could accomplish it by, like, the battle is happening, and she looks up, sees Jon Snow, and gets hit with an arrow. Like, that's it.
Ugh.
That's the extent of what they need
Super
to do.
Super economy.
They're like, okay, Rose, we're going to need you for 3 scenes this season, and then you're gone.
I wonder how much more time they're going to have at the wall in the next, you know, 2 episodes before the big battle, and then how much of that episode is going to be that big battle, because there's nothing in this episode from the wall. You've got a lot of you got a lot of other stuff you have to accomplish. I watched the next week on. Doesn't look like much of that's happening at the wall next week, so they may not have a whole lot of time to give us a lot more love for Ygritte, but it's going to be sad when she gets killed either way. Like, she's been a really great character, and she could just show up and get killed, and that'd be really sad.
It would. Yeah. It is odd to have like her be such a dominant character and then be largely gone and then die in episode 9. But you know,
a lot of time in that episode at the wall.
That's true. Well, I mean, I could see the whole episode being there. I could see them doing that. And then the other thing I was going to say, to your Varys Oberyn question from earlier, they did such, I mean, they've been, you know, I'm biased. I love Oberyn in the book. I love Pedro Pascal, et cetera, et cetera. But like this episode, just every scene, it's like a precious moment with Oberyn, and you know he's going to be gone. And he's just so good in every single line and gesture and look, and Charles dance too, like the two of them. And you're just like, how are we going to go forward without these characters? So.
We're going to have to get a bunch of new ones.
I was trying to describe to a non-spoilers person how upset they could potentially be over the remainder of the season. And she was trying to ask me about specific characters, and I was trying to demur. And she's like, well, will something happen to Tywin that I don't like? And I'm like, probably. She's like, oh, no. And I'm like, wait a minute. Do you like Tywin as a character, or is he like the bad guy? She's like, well, he's the bad guy. I'm like, oh, well, then you're probably okay.
I do think that's going to be a big shock, though, because that one really does feel like it comes out of left field.
Well, not just a... Sorry.
It happens. No, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not just a shock about Tywin and Shay dying, but like, who does the killing? And that this is the conversation I've been waiting to have ever since they, like, all that uproar over Jaime and like people claiming they understood where Jaime's arc was going and felt like the rug got pulled out from under them. And I want to be like, wait till you watch Tyrion kill 2 people. You're going to be so upset. Like, Tywin, I can see them cheering for, but if he chokes Shay out, like, even after this scene, like, yeah, Shay betrayed him, but if he chokes Shay out, on screen, which I can't imagine they're going to shy away from that. Like, I can't wait for the audience reaction to that. People are going to lose their minds. Tyrion is their favorite.
I really do feel, and the books really get this right, but you feel a sense of creeping darkness over a lot of the characters you like at the end of that third book, just based on how many noble characters have been really, like, really good characters have died. So there's this creeping darkness over Tyrion. There's the obvious stuff over Arya. But it really does take a much darker turn, which is weird to say, because there's been some dark shit in the show and the books to this point. But it really does get, it blurs the lines even further. So, you know, the Jaime stuff kind of feels precursor to that. It was really poorly handled precursor, but it all feels like they're kind of building toward, hey, all these characters you like, not only are they going to die, but they're going to do some really bad shit before they go.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, not yet. Either your favorite characters or your heroes are going to die, or they're going to become villains or villainish, you know, and that's the world that you have to exist in. That's the world that's being created for you, is this nebulous, gray, murky area. And how interesting is that? And that's going to be frustrating to some people who like a black and white story. But I just think it's what makes this story, elevates this story, you know?
It's just interesting to me because I was not expecting to hear from somebody that, like, because they're not broadcasting Tywin like they're broadcasting, you know, I mean, other characters. Like, he's had fairly sympathetic scenes. Like, he gave Jaime what he wants. I mean, he's a dick, but, you know, he did it. And, like, he's also a dick to Cersei, but he actually gave her the straight-up truth. And, you know, in the High Council, he's like, we gotta deal with that Daenerys girl, but, like, later. And, like, he had all the scenes with Arya, and everybody else is getting, like, these scenes where it's, like, Shay's staring, you know, Tyrion in the eye and lying to everybody, and it's like, yeah, I would like to see her die. I guess I just wasn't expecting talking to somebody that hadn't read the books that they hadn't enjoyed Tywin as a character. Because for me, it's like, the second he enters a room, I'm like, oh, things are gonna get good!
You know what I think it is? I don't think it's, we're not supposed to like Tywin, but we're supposed to feel safe in his character. Like, we're supposed, they want the audience to feel like that character above all characters is going to make it, because he's so good at playing the game. He does fall into a sense of logic. He is so in control that you kind of get comfortable with his existence in this world. And you're like, if you had a show, you know, somebody who only watched the show and you told him to write 1 through 10, you know, number 1, who's going to die next, and number 10, who's going to die last, Tywin would probably be very towards 10 on that list, because he feels like a safe character, which makes his death, the shock isn't going to be, oh, this character we like died. It's going to be, oh, this character we thought was winning died.
Well, exactly, because, like, it's one kind of shock to lose Ned, because you're like, oh, he's the good guy, he's supposed to win. But then you're like, oh, I get it. Okay, the rules are, if you're crafty and you're manipulative, then you win. And then Tywin dies. I think that's really smart. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Nice. I like that interpretation of it. It made me feel better about the thing I was feeling bad about.
Neil's here to comfort you.
He's totally safe. Just keep, you know, Tywin's good. He's going to win. Just like, you know, everybody right now thinks Tyrion's going to die. But not only does he not die, but his shit gets really dark.
Yeah, and that's almost worse, isn't it?
He does the opposite of not die. He goes bad.
But, like, the thing is, it has been interesting, because I did allude in that post that I wrote that we were going to lose a major character in every episode for the rest of the season. And so then that, like, hearing everyone's guesses, like, that was kind of shitty and spoiler of me. Like, I didn't need to say that. I shouldn't have said that, really. But, you know, so now that...
Yeah, I think the marketing department is fine with you saying that.
But so now that seed is planted, right? And everyone's like, oh, God, someone whose name I know is going to die this episode. Oh, God. And so people are like, is it Jaime? Is it, like, they're just guessing all over the place. And so that's kind of fascinating to me. And quite often they're wrong. As you say, a lot of people think Tyrion is going to die now. So.
So I guess as book readers and as a way to close out, pretend you're writers on Game of Thrones. Is the audience where you want them right now? Joanna.
Which audience?
I mean, the audience of the show that's making you money. I guess you don't know who that is, because the boss of your company is saying you could steal HBO Go, but, like, you know, your core audience.
Well, no, I
people
just
who
mean...
who haven't read the books?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like you have to qualify it as book readers or show watchers.
Oh, interesting. Okay, then both. Let's do both.
I think that there's a certain brand of book reader that's baffled by all the off-book stuff and don't understand that this is really what's good for them. And I think, you know, there's some stuff like, you know, show watchers aren't stupid. Like the Yara stuff doesn't really make 100% sense. Like they invented it. They needed to do it really quickly. It does get some character work done, but people are going, well, why did she leave so quickly? I don't understand. What was the point of that?
Why is she so afraid of the dogs?
Why is she so afraid of dogs? You know, so I think that there are some question marks surrounding their choices for sure. But, you know, people are primed for, you know, starting with this Tyrion trial, people are primed for the rest of the season. I think it's going to be good and people are going to be happy. So at least for a time.
Do you have a non-book reader opinion?
I was sort of...
You did both?
I think I did.
Excellent.
Maybe.
Well, if you don't need to differentiate, that was the answer to my original question. But Neil, you could answer any of the apparently three questions
I asked. I'll start with non-book readers. I think if I'm the showrunners, I've got them kind of right where I want them. Because if you're a non-book reader and you're watching the show, you're expecting one big thing. You know, you're expecting this trial to pay off into one big climactic thing. And where you want them as a showrunner is to not see what's actually coming. And what's actually coming is a long 4-episode pile of dead bodies that you just did not see coming. And I think so that you got them right where you want them, because they're expecting Red Wedding. You're going to give them like Red Continent. Red Family Reunion. But for a book reader, I think Joanna's right. You have these two types of book readers, the ones that are completely confused or just kind of bewildered by like, what does this all mean? And I feel like I started as that about 3 episodes ago, or maybe 4. But now as a book reader, I feel like I'm really having more fun with the show because I'm looking for all the cool new stuff and it's exciting to be surprised. Because I want that back. I want those surprises back that I don't have anymore because I've read the books. So it's nice to see those that are in there. So if you're a show, and I think that's what they're going for, the showrunners, is to be able to give some of the surprise back to the book readers. And I mean, they're just going to hammer the people who haven't read the books, and just like the books hammered all of us when we read them. So those are easy. That's low hanging fruit. But for the book readers, I think they're really having more fun with the book readers this year.
Yes, I guess as a way to answer, I will reveal the trickiness of my question, which is that I think that the writers don't even think about the book reader crowd because they consider that them and their writing for them covers it.
Sure.
But That's a very complex way to think about TV writing. I think that they managed to do a great thing, which is it didn't occur to me. I would have ended this episode differently if Neil wouldn't have explained my friend's curiosity about Tywin to me. But now that I can see that that's something that has been set up and that all these other pieces sort of successfully managed to set up, if they could pull off this line of dominoes, I think everyone's just going to feel devastated for months until it comes back, which is a perfect place for a television show to be.
I really need them to have as much mystery about what happens to Tyrion as possible ending this. Like you really, at the end of that book, you really feel like, wait, what? Like where'd
right.
he go?
Right.
Where'd he go? And he's gone for a whole book. So I really think that if they can build that up, that's really going to throw people off. And be a lot of fun in the off season.
Well, and if it ends with go ahead, Joe.
No, go ahead.
If it ends with Lady Stoneheart. I don't know if you guys are watching 24, but I'm like, oh, preview, because
Michelle Fairley. Oh, is she?
Yeah. Oh man, you guys aren't watching it?
No.
Okay. Yeah, she's it. She's out for vengeance because a drone killed, like, her husband, and she barely escaped, and she's, like, sort of rejecting her family for the cause. I'm like, oh my god, this is, like, warm-up, and it's, like, a 2024 one-off, so she's, like, totally shot all of it already.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is amazing. She's, like,
Proto.
Found a way to make her training another character in another series.
I started watching, like, the first 5 minutes of 24 earlier today, and there was a guy who looked just like you in the background of a shot. And I'm pretty sure he was a bad guy. So there you go.
Does Sean Bean show up and die? Because then that's pretty much brings it all full circle.
Yeah. Is it a crossover with Sean Bean's new show?
Okay, if 24 and the Terminator franchise somehow melded with Sean Bean thrown in, then I think we'd have a reasonable excuse to say that the Sarah Connors were manifested in a separate timeline of Westeros along with etc. But we're gonna have to wait for, you know, by the time this series is ended, all these actors will have been in other movies, and I think we could definitely make that web happen. Maybe that's our grand finale of Storm of Spoilers.
But in the meantime, someone who's listening should pre-design a shirt that says everyone you love is on a boat, and we'll have it ready to, like,
the off-season shirt.
Yeah, and we'll have it ready, like, as soon as the finale ends, it'll go on sale on, like, Redbubble or whatever, and we'll make a mint, guys.
Get on the internet.
Yeah, do that.
Everyone you love is on a boat. Joanna, where can people find more of your work until the next episode of Storm of Spoilers?
Every day on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, or you can go listen to me talk more about Game of Thrones on A Cast of Kings podcast.
Neil?
Sometimes I write for filmschoolrejects.com, mostly about Game of Thrones. And you can follow me at Rejects, and I will also be listening to A Cast of Kings. So we got that in common.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. I spell my first name DA7E. That's my Twitter handle. I write about superhero movie news and Star Wars on latino-review.com. I don't mean to sound bitter about either of those things, but you should check that site and figure out why I sound that way. I'm going to explain it this week. And until next week, we'll see you later on A Storm of Spoilers.